Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Corey Lofi, joined today by our friend, Mr. Joe Aitken, here for another compelling conversation about trees. Joe, we had a couple weeks off. I know you got to enjoy the 4th of July, got some time in the Great North Woods. How are you doing? How are you holding up?
You know, it's been good. It's been a good couple of weeks. It was, you know, it's interesting when you go on vacation, you got to come back to work these days to relax. But the interesting thing, and I'm sure if you do the same thing, Corey, is that even on vacation, and I guess that what makes us such nerds or tree geeks or tree dorks, whatever they want, is that I can't stop looking at trees even on vacation. So I grabbed a drink. I'm sitting on the beach and I'm looking up. I'm just watching the oak trees along Houghton Lake, which is an epicenter for oak wilt. And I'm thinking, man, it's got it. I'm looking, and it's sad, but I guess that's why we're in the industry, because regardless, it's in our heart. It's a passion of ours above and beyond a career. So it was good. It was good to be back. How was your, you know, to our listeners, I apologize for, it's been a couple of weeks since we dropped a fresh episode. Now we're back, kicking and scratching, so we got some good stuff coming up. How you doing, Corey?
I'm doing all right. Fatherhood with a five-month-old is terrifying and it's fun. It's just, you know, working on sleep, working on eating, working on life. And
yeah, you got that for what 18 more years?
Yeah.
Well, so hang in there, buddy. You're at the tip of the iceberg, brother.
Oh, it's fun. And we were on a walk just around 4th of July, and it was fun, but we stopped underneath, you know, some aspens, and Mason, our baby Mason, is up there looking at the aspen leaves. And that led into a conversation where my wife Pamela was saying, yes, Mason, they tremble. The Latin name is Populus tremoloides. They tremble. And then she actually showed Mason, and he doesn't, you know, 5 months old, he's not comprehending any of this, but she showed him the flat petiole, which is why they tremble and they quake in the wind. And I was so proud of my wife in that moment that I was just,
I was going to say the same thing. I asked my wife tree questions. She finally just told me to pretty much, in some terms that we won't use on the podcast, to off and leave her alone, that she doesn't care. So,
yeah, well, and it's always been my life passion. I know it's been yours, but I don't know where you want to go with tonight's conversation and our guest, but I'm curious to learn more about him and how he got here.
I can't tell you how excited I am to have our guest on tonight. We became friends through the years through an invasive insect, and I'm going to let our guest give a little a story on how he got into and how we met. But when we talk about, we're tree geeks, and I don't want to mean it to disrespect anybody. This guy is just an environmental geek.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't want to spoil how he got roundabout to what he does today, but an amazing man that has passion for life in the wild. In some of his explorations that he's done recently to protect the environment is actually mind blowing. And he comes from a little town in the Upper Peninsula. Now he's, you know, born and raised downstate, but he got away and moved up in the Upper Peninsula. I hope he'll explain a little bit about that. But I want to welcome our guest tonight, a good friend of mine, Joe Kaplan. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I apologize it took so long, but again, everything is timing. And timing is, there's no better time right now to and I'll tell you, because I'm bumping into issues with trees around the Midwest that are environmental issues that are probably causing it, but nobody wants to talk about. So I can't think of a better person to talk about the environment. Give the listeners a little intro, as long as you want. Just let them know who you are and how you got into what you do today.
Yeah, it started pretty early for me. So I grew up in Metro Detroit, and my passion has been birds since about 14 years of age. And before that, I dabbled in frogs, things you could catch, frogs, turtles, salamanders. And I was into trees for a while, and I got into trees by reading an article about Michigan big trees when I was like 14 in Michigan Department of Natural Resources magazine. And there was an article in there about a botanist, Paul Thompson, who had associations at Cranbrook Institute of Science.
Yeah,
and that was fairly close to my house. And I read about these champion trees, and they had images in there of these monster trees. And I just thought it was fantastic. And I said, I'm going to go find one of these. And I think at the time, Paul had found like 129 of the 169 state champions. And at the time, Michigan led the country in the number of national champions because of Paul Thompson.
Oh, wow.
And so I headed out, and I went down to measure this willow that grew on Gilbert Lake, and it was just a massive thing, but I didn't know what species it was. And it was like 9 inches short, or 9 inches short in circumference, which is based on state champions, or just girth at breast height. And it was like 9 inches short of the largest willow in Michigan. And at that time, that was growing up a black willow up in Grand Traverse County at the old state hospital. And on the way there, I passed this apple tree right on Telegraph Road at West Corton. And I thought, man, that's a big apple tree. And I measured it, and it was the state champion.
What? Oh, my God. That's awesome.
And I went back the next day. It's a little sad. This is kind of my life. But I went back the next day to identify that willow, and someone had freaking cut it down.
What?
Oh, the stump was like, 12 feet high. And I just remember, and it was a housing development. Like the next day they cut that willow down, but I had the state champion apple, and I sent in all the information to Paul Thompson and never heard back. So I grew up through high school telling people, hey, that's the unofficial state champion apple tree. Everyone just said, yeah, whatever.
I get that a lot. Whatever. Okay.
Whatever. Let's go get a pizza. Or, I was big into wrestling too growing up. But then I was in college, and I saw a reprint of that article my freshman year at Michigan State, which would have been 1983. Yeah, so I found that state champion apple like in the mid-70s. Anyhow, and there the tree was listed. And then I thought, son of a gun, the guy took credit. No wonder he's found all the champion trees in Michigan. He just steals credit.
What a D-bag.
Oh, no, it gets better than that. So I wrote him this note, and he said, he goes, our secretary of the botanical club, sometimes forgetful, she was in her 80s, and he had actually given me credit for it, but I never knew about it. And I think it was a missed opportunity of being a botanist, but by then I'd really gotten strong into birds. And so, and then about 10 years later, this is early 2000s, I met a guy from the David Millark from Northern Michigan that started a champion tree cloning program. And I'd gotten
Archangel Ancient Tree Archives.
Yeah. So I had contacted the head of the Metro Detroit Landscape Association, and they actually funded me to go back around and measure and refind all these Paul Thompson, who had passed away, all his champion trees in Metro Detroit, GPS them, remeasure them, which I did. And the culmination of this was giving a presentation to all these arborists. And I showed all these great champion trees, and the head of the Arborist Association afterwards said, can I use some of your slides? I'm giving a hazard tree talk at a conference in a couple of weeks, and I'd like to use your slides. And I was like, well, what do you mean hazard trees? And sure enough, I understand the reality of that now, but kind of went off on my way. And then, when I met Joe was like 2018, 2019, when emerald ash borer hit the UP. It took 20 years to go from Clinton Township, ground zero, to make it to Escanaba. And we were right on the edge of losing all of our ash trees, which had been planted in the aftermath of Dutch elm disease in the early 70s. It was the most important, white ash was the most important landscape tree until emerald ash borer. So Joe came up, trained me in, and we're carrying about 800 trees now for the city of Escanaba and private people. Yeah, no, it's really great. And these ash have been, they were 3/4 gone, but we saved quite a few of them, and their resilience coming back after you get that insect under control is fantastic. So you know, I do emerald ash borer.
It's amazing, Joe, that like I said, your background is not arboriculture.
No, I'm
Background is birds. And some of the things, tell the listeners, were you just in Antarctica? Where did you just go?
I do trips to Antarctica. That's how I go on vacation.
Yeah.
Seabirds, mammals, whales. Yeah. Yeah. No, I do. It's tourism. It's ship-based tourism. And I've been lucky to work for this company out in California, Cheeseman Ecological Safaris, since like 2009. And yeah, I get like one, two trips a year. It's super intense, but really enjoyable.
Saving the loons. That's another big thing.
Yeah.
You know, I look at you and I'm proud to know you, some of the stuff that you do. And I think what's amazing is that you, with your background, can connect the value of a tree, not just the aesthetic value of what an ash tree does, but the purpose of trees in an ecosystem. You know,
talk
a little bit about that, because it's not just a tree. And I think people forget that tree has more than just water retention, carbon sequestering, and energy savings. You can probably list a dozen other things that trees provide for the environment. So
yeah, I don't really care about
that a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my background, and you know, if anybody's listening wants to sort of delve into the importance of trees or habitat from a bird perspective, there's a book called Bringing Nature Home by entomologist at the University of Connecticut, Ptolemy. His first name, can't remember, Doug Ptolemy. Yeah, he's an entomologist out of the University of Connecticut, Bringing Nature Home. And it's really about the role that native plants play in the environment to support insect populations. He comes at it from a Lepidoptera perspective, you know, the number of moss and butterfly larvae that these native plants support. And, you know, right at the very top of the list is red oak. I mean, red oaks look terrible late summer because they support like almost 500 species of Lepidoptera. So everything eats red oak.
What? There are 500 species of
something like
moss
that. Like,
caterpillars?
That's
crazy.
455. Yeah. So it's high ranking. And then, you know, you think of something like buckthorn or Norway maple, you know, popular street tree in the 60s. We have three in our yard growing up, 18 years of living at home, or 16 years, 17, whatever. You know, I saw one bird, red-eyed vireo, in that tree. It supports nothing. It's a biological desert with leaves. And something that breaks my heart is I see these ash, you know, the ones that were too far gone, not at the city level, but like, you know, business, as they replace these things, they're replacing them with like King Crimson maple. And I'm just like, ugh. You know, ash supports probably 130 species of Lepidoptera larvae, and Norway maple supports nothing. Zero.
I think that's nothing an important thing on understanding when you decide what you have on your property and where you invest your finances in. You know, obviously, if a red maple gets to the point where it ain't doing well, it's a weed. So maybe that's a removal, but then you put your effort into maybe a red oak, which changes. And I think it just changed my thought process on how valuable red oaks are in Michigan and how devastating oak wilt can be to a sector.
Well,
100%. Yeah. Totally.
And I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, you know what, from a homeowner's perspective, and they don't, I didn't know, I'm sure most homeowners don't know that there's 400 and something species of caterpillars and moths affecting oak trees, but maybe they'd hear something like that and think, well, the maple, crimson maple, Norway maple has nothing. So I want the maple because nothing's going to eat it. But we're looking at it from a different holistic perspective here, which is really cool and something that I don't think we've ever done, Joe, on the podcast, really.
But I don't think, now you got 400 plus Lepidoptera surviving off that red oak. Now, they're not all invasive to where the point, now spongy moth, obviously, oak, well, there's insects and diseases that are catastrophic. But before those were there, these trees can go pretty much virtually unnoticed that these 400 insects are living off it.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's its job. I mean, it's built up defenses, you know, to basically survive. But if you look at an oak in late summer, most of them don't look, you know, they've been chewed on for sure. I mean, you see impact, and you know, homeowners will say, "Gosh, you know, this gall or so, I mean, or the insect damages, there's something I should worry about." And I'm like, "No, man, that oak is doing its job, because that Lepidopteran in turn fuels, you know, birds. I mean, birds are in there foraging. You know, we think of like spruce budworm, big outbreaks in Michigan last 10 years. And, you know, that's a cyclic native insect that can be pretty devastating. But those spruce are going to come back. It's not going to be 100%. It's not going to be like Dutch elm disease or worse, emerald ash borer, where you lose every mature tree on the landscape that's not treated. Same thing with American chestnut. I mean, what a loss to lose American chestnut. And elm. I mean, elm, chestnut, American beech. How about hemlock? I mean, if hemlock gets, hemlock woody adelgid gets the UP, I just hope I'm dead of old age. Let's put it that way. I don't want to see that world. So
that's a beautiful, hemlock's a beautiful tree for, because we have listeners all over the world.
Yeah.
And all over the country. Hemlock, in my mind, you know, there's nothing more iconic than red oak, white pine, and hemlock stand in the UP. The hemlocks, they have such a cool form, and they have the softest, like, you know, shepherd's crook top, but it's so beautiful, especially in the wind. So
And it's huge thermal cover for white-tailed deer.
Oh yeah,
grouse. Yeah, so from a like a sports person perspective, it's real valuable. I mean, you know, people can overlook the plight of, you know, wood warblers decline, but everybody loves deer and grouse. So
Think about where hemlock grows. It's more of a down bottomland, swampy, along a river tree. Now, when you start losing hemlocks, what happens to the creek that it's next to?
Ooh,
and the soil.
It changes the temperature. The water heats up.
Yeah.
A lot of the biology that's surviving around there is all gone.
Yeah, that's going to be ash too. I mean, we've lost full canopies. Our coastal plain up here in the UP, at least in the southern UP where I live, I mean, it was dominated by ash. And the ash won't be gone, but the mature ash will be gone. The canopy will be gone. And yeah, it's going to have a negative consequence on cold water fisheries. You know, smallmouth bass are probably going to celebrate, but
your trout,
which is kind of
an
invasive. Yeah. It's not like we love fishing for smallmouth, but
oh, some people do. That's religion up here. Be careful.
Oh, and I apologize. Yeah. The Uber's up there. It's
a fun catch. Smallmouth is a fun catch. It dances with the line. And so there somebody, you know what I'm talking about.
But I think what tonight's conversation is all about is that Corey, you and I take care of urban settings primarily. It's an urban issue because, like you said, Joe, they planted ash trees in the environment because they did so well in such horrible conditions that ash trees became the replacement for elms. And again, we learned back there, you know, monoculture, the whole nine yards that we're taught in urban forestry, but we still do it. We still allow it to happen, and it still happens, and we're still battling it 75 years later.
They're replacing all the ash now with autumn blaze maples.
I was going to say, autumn blaze, which is that a red maple or a sugar maple?
Cross between a red and a silver, yeah.
That's what, you know what? Hundreds of those are going into Escanaba. That's what it is, autumn blaze maple.
Why?
Because that's what horticulturists are giving us, right?
Yeah.
We don't, you know, we don't get red oaks. I mean, because they're easy. They must be, it's easy and cheap. And the consumer doesn't care. I mean, when I first moved to Menards or moved to Escanaba, Menards had an incredible native plant selection. And I talked to the garden guy there at the garden center. I said to my wife, Christina, I was like, boy, that guy really knows his stuff. Like, I'm impressed. Well, I come to find out he had a PhD in horticulture and he used to teach at a college down south. And he decided to retire and come home. And so he took a job at Menards. Menards had a PhD horticulturalist.
Okay.
Who knew his stuff? Oh, we had great plans, and he retired. We're back to Autumn Blaze, Barberry. I mean, the stuff that I wouldn't plant in my worst enemy, you know, my worst enemy's yard. Sorry to all the landscapers out there, but we need to be more creative. We really do. And
well, and holistic, I mean, you know, kind of bringing the conversation full circle. What is the tree's purpose? What is its function other than a paleocentric or an ethocentric perspective? What is it doing for the greater overall environment? What's the relationship with the soil, with the wildlife? That's a great topic.
Well, we could talk about
a topic we don't talk about, Joe. We don't talk about it. We don't discuss it. I'm trained as an urban forester that carbon sequestering, water retention, heat island effect, cooling. We don't talk about the biology and the life other than that tree that it supports. And we can't afford to lose a species.
How do we change it? How do we bring what Joe Kay is saying here today? How do we bring this to the masses? What do we do? Bring wildlife experts, Joe? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, or just celebrating native plants. I mean, instead of Autumn Blaze, you know, why not just a good old fashioned sugar maple? Who plants sugar maples anymore in their yard?
Oh, and my God, I found a guy that's got them, and I want to do them up north at my property because 10, 15 years, I could be tapping them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, extracting sap for sure. Oh,
we knew what you were talking about.
Things get rough in the North Woods there, people.
Yeah, it sure does. I tell you, you got to be careful when you solicit for emerald ash borer treatments.
Oh,
because I say, you know, you go up to someone and say, you got a really nice ash. I'd like to, you know,
yeah,
I'd like to treat it or worse. Yeah. You know how it works. Yeah.
Tapping that ash.
Yeah. Drilling. Like to inject that ash with some emnectin benzenate.
Here, leave me alone.
4%. That's all.
And then they call the police.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So yeah, I think it's important that we continue the message. And I think what makes it amazing, Joe, is that you seen the need and you acted. And I truly wish that more outdoorsmen, I know you and I did a really neat segment on discovering 906. We got some word out there. We were talking to people up there. It's important that we continue to spread the message, even though we feel that a lot of times it's bouncing off the bill of their cap and they're not hearing it. If you can catch one person, one homeowner, one conservation district, one group that will hear it and do something about it, I think then it's all worthwhile.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And you said conservation districts, and I think they have a good role in this. And just really promoting the use of native plants and, you know, books like Bringing Nature Home, it should be a textbook to read to sort of, you know, get that understanding of what we can do in our yards to make them not only aesthetically pleasing, but, you know, a value of something besides just, you know, something to look at, like invest in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that because I work with MDNR, Michigan State conservation districts. I truly believe that their heart's in the right spot. I just don't think there's enough of them. Does that make sense, Joe? There's just not enough voices preaching this.
I don't think there's enough people. I mean, it's not a topic. You know, when's the last time that we went to conferences and they're talking about kind of this whole picture, the big picture? It's not very often. Soil is starting to become kind of the next sexy thing. You know, people are talking about soils and microbes, but I think a lot of what Joe Kay has brought today just hasn't come up. It's just unaware. People are aware of pollinators and they're starting to be more aware of soil. But to hear wildlife and, you know, full on entomology and insect diversity within a tree,
it's incredible.
And migratory birds. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I got into it. So I've seen in my yard, I've recorded, it was the one on Lake Michigan, 220 species of birds from my yard. And it's 160 by like 180 deep.
That was big oak tree next to the house, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that thing just fills up.
A beautiful tree.
Yeah, and it fills up with birds in fall and spring and warblers. I mean, I've had some great birds in there. And, it's old. It's falling apart. So I just maintain it. I mean,
perfect.
Well, a tree's entrenched. They're living organisms too. They gotta take a break one time, reel themselves back in, shed a few branches, take a deep breath, and say, "Let's go again."
Yeah, so, it's hard because arborists don't, they don't encourage people to leave a sort of a half ratty tree. I mean, how many people call you say, "My tree has a disease; it needs to be cut down." And I'm thinking,
can you prune it so it looks half ratty?
Yeah. No. But you know what I mean? Like disease. Yeah. It's like, well, it doesn't have a disease. It's just, it's just old, like you and I kind of, right?
I think, it's got an old soul and it's happy. It's content. It's feeding the wildlife. But I think another interesting thing that I think our listeners, I was excited when I visited Escanaba. And if you have never seen the movie Escanaba in the Moonlight, there is a scene that Jeff Daniels drives by this football field. And there's a whole bunch of, are they fir trees? What are those trees by the football field?
Douglas fir. They're Douglas
Big Doug firs. They got to be 80 to 100 foot tall. And they're all declining. And Joe and I were looking at it. And we tried talking to the city. And they're like, nobody knows. And they're probably still declining if they haven't taken them down yet. But if you watch the movie, Jeff Daniels drive right by them. So it's pretty cool that these trees that Joe and I are talking about are actually in a movie, which is pretty neat.
And we still don't know what's wrong with them.
I swear to God, Joe, if you get a chance, and I just found this out, we have a Corey and I have a contact in Ontario. A phenomenal arborist, Philip Van Wassner. And I was asking him because I have some white pine issues here in Michigan. Now, the MDNR, not sure what's going on. Michigan State's not sure what's going on. White pines are declining. So I mentioned this to Philip, and he goes, there's a new report that just came out that there is a term now called white pine decline. And it's associated with environmental stress. Because nobody wants to talk about it, but there's a change in the environment. And the report says that conifers are the first ones to react to environmental stress, which it only takes a couple of degrees change to create a stress in the environment. It white pines don't know how to take it. So it creates a weaker plant that's susceptible to just about everything. And white pines are declining now. So.
Well,
yeah, I think you got it. Yeah.
You really got to look deep into what's going on. You know, I don't want to bum the listeners out, but Joe and Corey, I drove over to my cabin across M10 in Michigan this week and just heartbroken with how many dead trees between there and up to my dad's place in the woods. Now, I know we got oak wilt in that area, and I know we got spongy moth, but the evergreens are all tanking. Spruce trees look horrible. There's not enough public interest yet to say what's going on.
Yet.
Exactly. Do you wait till they're all dead?
Well, Joe K, we're moving forward with the conversation, and
yeah, this is why I don't get invited to parties. I'm kind of a downer at
you're not. What?
I'm with you.
As you're thinking about what Joe Aiken just said there, as you're thinking about kind of your career and the culmination of you being able to piece these different environmental and ecological factors together. What advice or how would you suggest maybe that some arborists that haven't heard this conversation or thought of things this way, how would you suggest they start to look at things? What tweak do you think or consideration you think we need to make?
Oh, I mean, I mean, if you want to set yourself apart from the rest of the pack, I mean, find a good, you know, especially nursery people, you know, find good native stock. I find that people are interested. It's just hard to, you know, it's hard to find an outlet for it. You know, the conservation districts, I think, could really fill that gap. But, you know, we just need better. We need better stock and sort of promote the idea of tree preservation. I think that's really what it is like tree preservation and tree tolerance and valuing individual trees. You know, I mean, we converted our place in Escanaba. It was like, you know, boundary to boundary, pretty much no trees. And, you know, 12 years later, it's like being up north again.
It's pretty cool.
And awesome. The whole front yard is like, you know, I got a little carried away. I planted cup plant, didn't control it. So, you know, by the end of summer, I got like 12-foot silphium behind a wood fence. And it looks good and attracts, you know, migrating monarchs. I'll get like 150 monarchs in the yard. And at night, they cluster on that oak tree Joe was talking about. You know, using more native plants, like, you know, some lawn conversions. I've converted our median between the sidewalk and the road into like short grass prairie. And it's just, you know, I don't have to water it. It's not weedy. And it's nice. You know, it has a late summer bloom. I attract migrating monarchs on their way to Mexico. They like that late flowering native perennials. You know, New England aster, some of the silphiums, cup plant.
Joe, I think what's, yeah. You know what, I hear what you're saying, and I visited your property and it's beautiful. It's breaking a stereotype of what front yards and yards are supposed to look like.
Yeah.
You know, when did
Kentucky bluegrass, happen? No dandelions, I get it.
Yeah, clover, biggest food for bees in the spring is clover, and we spray shit up, but just spray so much herbicide to get rid of them.
Well, yeah. And like Joe K just said there, he said Kentucky bluegrass, no dandelions. I mean, think that is monoculture, which is exactly what we've been talking about avoiding this whole time. It's just diversity, natives, and what can you do to minimize our impact on the environment? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you just got to get over what the neighbors think.
Yeah,
and
those are wise words.
Yeah, I stopped caring about what the neighbors think a long time ago. That's why I buy dilapidated houses. You know, the house that we rebuilt took me 4 years, had toilets and tires in the background and huge tarps. So anything I did was an improvement.
Just had to move in. It was an improvement.
Yeah, I just had to, you know, put windows back on the house. So hey. My crazy landscaping is the least of the issues, but no, it's really, you know, just being, you know, developing that aesthetic and, you know, just trying to find landscapers that have material that you can plant and not feel like you're just, you know, trying to fill a void or fill a space.
What's the purpose?
Yeah. What's the purpose? So if you like white pines, if you like red pines, plant them. I mean,
yeah,
but it's hard to go somewhere. It's hard to go to a big box store and buy, you know, a 3-foot red pine to plant in your yard.
They don't sell them.
They don't. Why is that?
I don't know. Jack pines, red pines, and white pines are all native species. The only three native species to Michigan. Wow. And you can't find them.
Yeah. Jack, why is that?
I haven't heard anybody say jack pine in 10 years.
Really?
Wow. Yes. Pinus banksiana, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. You got it. I have cones opening fires. Yeah.
Nobody's.
Corey. You should really show me what a nerd you are by knowing that. Well, talking about in 10 years, you pulled that out of my hat.
I probably haven't said that since when did I graduate? 2011. It's been 12 years. God bless.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You know what? Hey, tree nerds. I want to say something real quick to our listeners. We got some long-term listeners. And Joe, you're the responsible person that got us our music for our podcast. Is through Joe.
What? Joe? Yeah, Lauren. Lauren.
Lawrence. Joe hooked us up with the guy in the group from the school in the Upper Peninsula that created the music video that we use on the intro and exit on a podcast.
That's awesome.
Joe did it. That was back when you and I did the 906 Discovering.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Lauren, the percussionist. He's a great guy.
Yeah, yeah. So I just wanted our listeners to know that a little tidbit of who Joe Kaplan is. And you've been more involved in the industry with me and with his podcast without even getting the recognition. So I can't say thank you enough for coming on tonight and hanging out with Corey and I, a couple of tree dorks, and given perspective that we don't hear enough. And I think I think we need to change how we talk at conferences. So maybe we need you to come down and talk at a conference or two.
I'd love to hang out with you guys, but I have to push back on this just a little bit because, you know, this has been a symbiotic relationship. You've taught me more about trees way beyond just Latin names. So I appreciate it. I mean, really, without you, there'd be a lot more dead ash in the UP. A lot more. Like every single one. So yeah. a thousand ash firewood. Trees.
It's just firewood. We'll burn that. So
a thousand ash trees owe their life to you, Mr. Aiken. I appreciate it. So
all right, thank you, sir.
I look forward to more of the same.
Awesome. Thanks again, both Joe K and Joe A. Really good conversation. And we look forward to the next one.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, and lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.